Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I was watching the Dallas Mavericks and Sacramento Kings play today, and there was a stretch in the fourth quarter where neither team scored a bucket in the last 2 minutes of that game, eventually forcing overtime.
Nice.
And I got to tell you, do not miss Luke Walton's coaching at all.
Yeah.
I know, you know, you probably don't want to like comment on different.
Frank Vogel is a blessing. I will say that. Frank Vogel is a blessing. I can say that.
That's well handled. That was well done. But as I was watching, I can say whatever I want here. As I was watching it, it was just isolation after isolation after isolation to mid-range jumper to like, it also, what I realized as I was watching this, and you don't have to comment, you can just like cough or nod along if you want. But what I realized as I was watching Sacramento's offense, it was the same kind of thing that ailed the Lakers, was not only was the offense itself overly simplistic, and not only did it not have a B, C, or D option, but on top of that, the A option was designed to get guys shots that they probably shouldn't be taking in the first place. Mm-hmm. That's what drove me crazy, watching De'Aaron Fox take mid-range jumpers instead of trying, you know, having room to get to the rim. Like, you have Buddy Hield out there. You have Bogdan Bogdanovic. You have Nemanja Bjelica. Like, they have enough shooters out there to where they should be able to spread the floor. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking, what is going on? And then I'm also, because I have some friends, Greg Wissinger, Brad Geiser, some other friends who like cover or pay close attention to the Kings. And as this is going on, these guys are like just pulling their hair out of their head. And I'm like, oh, yep. Yeah, I remember that. So as you were saying, Frank Vogel
is a blessing.
Is a blessing.
That's my official statement.
Today's show, we are not going to be talking about Luke Walton for the entirety of it, or getting or trying to get Pete fired by talking about Luke Walton. Today's show, we are actually, it's going to be a combination of a couple things. I noticed a trend today as a result of or in response to one of the things that LeBron said. So we're going to start the show by talking about that. And then from that conversation, we are going to carry over to one of our headline shows. They have a ton on Silver Screen and Roll of headlines that we can kind of parse through, some stuff that we can have some fun with. So we have a ton to get to. But yeah, I wanted to start, like I said, with LeBron was, you know, kind of talking about the accomplishment that is finishing with the best record in the West. And he basically said, like, nobody believed in us. And he said that I'm going to enjoy this. And I was interested. I was not necessarily surprised by the reaction to it, because Twitter is Twitter, but I noticed the reaction to it was, wait, who was actually questioning you? And there was a lot of snark in response to LeBron's kind of enjoying that moment. And
a lot of amnesia on Twitter.
Yeah. Like not, and like, we could do the receipts thing. I think that's a really boring show. Like, personally.
If we do the receipts thing, it will not be after the regular season.
Yeah.
If there are receipts to be read, we are absolutely doing receipts show, just not after the regular season.
I'll pull up audio and everything if that's what it takes. You know,
sounds good.
When that time comes, to me, that's not as interesting. To me, what I found interesting as a result of the snark directed at LeBron was, we literally, like a freaking month ago, celebrated the fact that Michael Jordan was out there talking about all the perceived slights that got him to the greatness that like we all love to celebrate. And my thing is it a generational thing? Is it that like we know the results of it after the fact? Like, I want to know what the difference here is between, why is it people love to say, oh man, it's so cool that Michael Jordan saw George Karl in a restaurant and George Karl didn't say hi, so Michael Jordan knew right then he was going to fuck him up. And it's like, LeBron says something similar and people are like, oh my God, this guy, nobody actually questioned you. Like, what? I legitimately don't really understand where this is coming from. So Pete, I'm interested in your best theory on where this is coming from.
Man, it's just all who you root for, right? Like, we see the best in the people we root for, and we see the worst in the people we root against. And it's really no more complicated than that. It's also, we don't do a good job of celebrating greatness while it's happening.
Mm.
And, like, this is one thing with, for one, we're always comparing, and there's the old saying, comparison is the thief of joy. And, like, is Giannis the MVP? That's fine. This is an all-time great season by LeBron James.
Yeah.
This is one of, if not the best player of all time, having one of his best seasons. And it's not just on-court production, right? It's leadership, yeah. It's cohesiveness. It's like, this is a masterclass. And he's got more in the tank too. Right now, none of it, you know, we're not going to write songs and poetry about it if he doesn't bring home a title, right? Mm-hmm. But if he does, man, this is an all-time season. And, like, can we just celebrate that in the moment? Like, I don't care where you have him on your all-time list. There's never been anybody better at this age. And he's been in the conversation for well over a decade for the best player in the NBA. And he's just like, can we appreciate it? Like, you don't have to compare it to Michael. You don't have to compare it to Giannis in the present day, Kawhi, or Anthony Davis's performance, right? Like, just messing up Rudy Gobert. Like, I think part of it is, yeah, we don't appreciate in the moment greatness as it's happening. And yeah, this team being as good as they are, LeBron should be proud of that. This team should be proud of that. The leadership of the organization should be proud of it. They really, like, they're one of the great joys in watching sports is watching a team that really fits together, that really clicks. They're not perfect, but this team, like, it works and mm-hmm. it's super fun to watch, and everybody should take a lot of pride in that.
I also think, like, part of this, I think there are several levels to this. So let's take a quick second here. So when we come back, I can offer up some of where I think the snark especially is coming from. And we'll see if we can dig into it. But even while I point out where the snark might be coming from, I think it doesn't really excuse the snark so much as it just kind of highlights what we do wrong in enjoying sports in the same way you were talking about, Pete. Mm-hmm. So let's hang tight. We'll come back to that here in a bit. Sports are back. I've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind, and that's MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime, game-winning shot, all wrapped into one. I love it, you love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams, and with the start of NBA basketball right now, there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's NBA Championship Future Bets. Nothing shows you believe in your better team like betting on them before the playoffs have even begun. But why stop with basketball? Smart bettors are already looking towards the future, and in this case, that means baseball, hockey, football, you name it. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite MLB, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today, and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you gotta do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. The way I would kind of put it is, it's a lot easier to be funny when you're tearing something else down, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of difficult to praise somebody and be funny in the process of doing so. And I think Twitter mm-hmm. is, in and of itself, a lot of people trying to be funny. So when mm-hmm. something happens, it's harder, it's a lot easier to poke fun at something in order to make the joke and have a whole bunch of people respond positively to the joke But in essence, we're responding negatively to the same thing that we would respond positively if it came in a pre-Twitter era. And and I think that in and of itself kind of highlights how Twitter has kind of screwed up our enjoyment of sports. That like we can't just enjoy something, right? We have to enjoy something either in a unique enough way that people enjoy us enjoying that thing, right? Like that's like our show, right?
Sure.
Any podcast, right? Is the point here for if you're covering a good Lakers team is to point out how good that Lakers team is in as unique a way as possible, or you know, as educational way educational a way as possible, right? Like that's like what you and Darius kind of aim for. And like we have all these different podcasts just in the specific Lakers kind of forum where we try to be as unique in our enjoyment of this team as possible. But when you get to Twitter and people aren't Lakers fans and people aren't generating content to try to appeal to Lakers fans, the appeal at that point becomes to non-Lakers fans. And if you're trying to appeal to non-Lakers fans, what are you going to do? You're going to try to shit on the Lakers, right? Because that's the easiest way to tear down the Lakers and also be funny. So I just think, for the most part, I've enjoyed Twitter because it has introduced me to a whole bunch of friends I wouldn't have had otherwise. It has literally opened up a career I would never have had otherwise, in a way of life that I would not have had otherwise. But also, I do think there are ways in which Twitter really screws up sports fandom. And I think one of the ways that that has done so is we all got together and enjoyed The Last Dance. And then as we're watching another example of what we enjoyed about The Last Dance, we get together and shit on it because that's what we do together on Twitter. Now, I think it's kind of a bummer to watch that take place in the moment as it was happening.
Yeah, I mean, you pretty much nailed Twitter. I mean,
nobody's ever said that before.
Yeah, I mean, that's
not about my Twitter account. Nobody has ever said, Anthony, you have nailed Twitter. You figured out. all right, let's go ahead and shift gears here. The first headline that jumps out to me here on Silver Screen and Roll is Rajon Rondo is expected to travel back to Orlando on Wednesday. My question to you, Pete, is there a point where the guys who have replaced Rondo, whether it's Deion Waiters, Alex Caruso getting more minutes, KCP getting more minutes, is there anything that the Lakers could see that would convince them it's not worth it to try to reacclimate Rajon Rondo back into this rotation?
I think that the closer it gets to that Western Conference Finals series. And, you know, as we're recording this, Houston's about to fall to Portland. So, you know, they may be a 4 seed, a 5 seed, and they would be a tough out for sure. Yeah, because when Rondo comes back, he will have not played basketball in 5-6 months, right?
Yeah.
And like, oh, welcome back, by the way, it's the Western Conference Finals, or it's even the Western Conference semifinals.
Yeah, second round against Houston.
Right, and like so the type of player Rondo is, our opinions on him aside, that's a tough ask of anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, would he be able to do it? Maybe. I think handling the ball and passing specifically has a lot of timing elements to it that he'd need some in-game action where I don't see the point where he comes back and the games don't matter. Maybe it's a blowout or something and you get him a little bit of run, but do you put him back in the lineup right away after not playing 5-6 months? It just seems like a really tough ask. I mean, if he can do it, great. I'm skeptical, especially with Waiters has done a solid job. He was, you know, didn't have the best game against the Utah Jazz, but overall he's been good, right? Like we've been pretty happy with what Deion's brought to the table. So I don't know, man. I think it's a tough ask. Maybe this is me, you know, wanting it to be a certain way. It just, with all of that, with the him not playing in almost 6 months, by the time it comes back, I just don't see how it happens.
I think the other thing that needs to be factored in there is the math of what might be at risk. The Lakers at that point will have won a playoff series, might have legitimate momentum on their side there, right? Might be figuring some things out. Dion Waiters, like, even as you say, he didn't play his best game, he was still just shy of the best plus minus on the team last night, and or 2 nights ago by the time you guys are listening to this. And, you know, if the Lakers get into any kind of role whatsoever, the, you know, the kind of math that goes into that historically in sports has been, let's not mess with something right now while we have so much on the line and while we're winning games that we have to be winning here. So, you know, team politics, I know, are going to play a role, but those kind of have to be damned here if the Lakers get into that situation. Like, I'm sorry, I just don't think Rajon Rondo is so important a player that the Lakers have to figure out a way to find a role for him if the Lakers are heading into the second round against a Houston team that, by the way, will have won a one series to that point and might be figuring out some momentum of their own, right? So, like, by the time the Lakers maybe face Houston, or, you know, if it isn't Houston, it's Utah. If it isn't Utah, it's OKC, right? There is no kind of easy, maybe easy. Utah's an easy opponent, I think, by second round standards. But you know, aside from that, that is not where you want to be trying to reconfigure your rotational math. Like, that's not the spot you want to be trying new things, because that's what Rondo would be there, right? He would be a new thing that they'd be trying to add after having played in the bubble now for, at that point, you know, a month and a half.
Yeah, they'll have some semblance of rhythm that he just can't have from not playing.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we have a couple more headlines that I think we can give our thoughts on. All right, this is going to sound like a very first takey question, but the headline I'm looking at is Anthony Davis wants the Lakers to win it for Kobe. And, you know, we've already seen that the Lakers, like, as they're, you know, saying 1, 2, 3 and then breaking up a huddle, right, they're saying Kobe and all of that stuff. Do you think the Kobe element of this is something that they can unquestionably rally around, or do you think there's a possibility that adds some undue pressure?
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it, right? With the pressure and whatnot. I think a lot of these guys, we forget, like, we think of Kobe from a fan's perspective, mm-hmm. of this icon. He was a peer and a mentor to those guys, right? Like, there's mm-hmm. a personal relationship there, right? Especially, and with LeBron, Kobe's one of the few people on the planet that just knows what it's like to live a life like that, to be that famous in the sport of basketball specifically. And so I don't know if it's pressure. I don't really see, especially a team led by LeBron, maybe if they were younger or had different leadership, I don't see it as pressure. And I see it more on an individual basis of, this is what Kobe meant to me, rather than we have to win a title for Kobe for the city of LA and all that. I really don't think it's like that. I think it's, mm-hmm. it's more, you know, he's somebody that, even in, you know, I'm not a player myself, but, you know, I think every day about Kobe. And I think when I'm tired and when I'm working on something and when I'm going through melts and my eyes are crossing, you know, I'm thinking, like, all right, I grew up on Kobe, right? I'm a child of the Mamba mentality, right? He was the older brother I didn't have. And so I feel from my position, a sense of responsibility to do my best and to fall in love and stay in love with basketball in the way that I always have, and really honor it, to honor the sport, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that is the lesson of Kobe in a lot of ways that, you know, players will carry in terms of how that translates to, we got to win it for Kobe. I know AD said that. I don't know. I don't view it quite through that lens.
I think the way that I'm kind of looking at it is it's going to be really productive until it potentially isn't, at which point I would hope that a team led by LeBron, who has the amount of experience that he has, would understand, all right, like, let's actually shift gears and really focus on what we got to take care of here. Right. Mm-hmm. And then after the fact, if the Lakers win it, you know, if it does come to that point where, you know, maybe the Kobe thing is becoming a distraction, I don't think it would ever become a distraction, but like, if it is applying some pressure, if they're feeling some stuff that they don't really want to be feeling in that moment, I think a LeBron team, or a team as veteran laden as the Lakers are, will understand, all right, let's just, like, you know, let's sidestep that for a little bit, take care of what we have to, and then after the fact, really hammer the Kobe thing after the fact, you know? And, mm-hmm. and the other thing too is, I think it's just as likely, if not more likely, really, and like you're saying, that when the chips are down, like, we just, I think, favorite Kobe game is that game 7 in 2010, where Kobe mm-hmm. shot 6 of 24 and was shooting like ass, right? It was just not a great game. And then when it came time for it, it was the fourth quarter, and he started really forcing the issue and getting to the free throw line. And I think he walked away in that game with 16 rebounds, right? And so, like, he was doing whatever he possibly could to, even despite him shooting so poorly, he was able to reach down and find something else within himself to help his team win that game, right? And force his team across that finish line. And to me, like, if I was a Laker and I was saying, hey, I got to win this for Kobe, even while, like, winning it for Kobe is the phrase that fans want to hear, the way I would kind of look at this is, there are going to be times where Laker shooters aren't going to be hitting it, right? LeBron is going to fall into a rut. You know, we've already seen a couple instances where the team will go under screens and LeBron doesn't have his jumper that night, and he has to kind of try to figure out something else, you know. AD, same kind of thing. And to me, like, if the Lakers are going to be saying to themselves, we got to win this for Kobe, let's keep Kobe at the forefront of our minds, the way that I think that remains positive no matter what is going on is to really identify what it is Kobe means to the sport, and like you were saying, means to life, you know, the idea that there are going to be nights like, dude, you and I were just, we're recording this at 11 o'clock my time. And the reason we're doing that is because all day today, I have been shipping rock to and from my house where it's being built into our garage, which, by the way, eventually I'm going to have to ship that rock back there. I'm exhausted. And there are going to be nights where the Lakers are exhausted. Their legs aren't feeling it. The shot isn't, you know, the ball isn't feeling right off of their fingertips when they're releasing it. But that doesn't mean you don't have to win that game. And, like, to me, while it's great to say we're winning this for Kobe, to me, what makes me the most interested in that, and I think it's the way that you're viewing this as well, is that that tells me that with Kobe at the, you know, whether it's in the back of their minds or at the forefront of their minds, what they're thinking there is, we just have to get this shit done no matter what it takes, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is exciting, because that might mean a title.
Yeah, I mean, it's... no, it's funny. It's the Kobe is, it's kind of like, there's so much other stuff going on in the world right now that I tread lightly when discussing basketball in context with that, right? Like like winning it for Kobe, like, you know, it would be a great relief. And I would, Kobe will, if we win the title this year, Kobe will be one of the very first people that I think of. Mm-hmm. That said, it's still basketball, right? And it's still, there's still a massive hole left where he's gone, and there always will be, right? I still get choked up thinking about him. So,
dude, the other night they showed Anthony Davis scored 20 points in like It was the first like Laker to do that, you know, in the same season or something like that, right?
Like 20 times.
Yeah.
To have a 20-point half or so. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I forget what the graphic was. And then, like, the other guy that was on that graphic was Kobe a couple times. And I was like, and I remember, again, like, I was watching that game with my little brothers. And Andrew, who was not as much into basketball as Alex and I am, was like, good Lord, I can't believe he's gone. And it just really just like slapped me upside the head. And I was just like, you know, I got to go to the fridge and get a drink or something like that. And like, sure. And kind of contain myself. But yeah, I did that. There is that hole and there is no way to fill it, but honoring it is the best we can possibly do.
Yes. Yeah. It was it.
Let's end on this because I do think this is an interesting point. Kyle Kuzma says seeing LeBron play defense the way he has been has, quote, lights a fire under the Lakers. And I wish more NBA players understood this. I wish more superstars kind of understood the value in leading by example on that half of the court.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that makes me sound like an old school Hoosiers, like slap the court, five passes before you shoot kind of thing. But I really find that really interesting, that, you know, Kuzma is looking at it that way. Do you think that's a concerted effort on LeBron's part to do that? Or do you think over the course of the season, he's just kind of figured out that has become a habit because he has to live up.
Yeah.
The fellow superstar is Anthony Davis. He's going to play some great defense.
Sure.
If LeBron is, if he's slacking off, it's really going to show.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that's part of it, right? The fact that the other guy, who by the way is our leading scorer as well, right? Yeah. Like you can't be saying like, I don't really feel like, and LeBron has alluded to this by the way, right? Like that having a guy like AD next to him is going to get hit. Like AD can get on LeBron's case and be like, yeah, well, I got a big offensive load too. I know you're older, but like,
yeah.
Let's go, right? And
I would love to hear Anthony. I would love to see Anthony Davis' face or LeBron's face when Anthony Davis goes, hey, man, I know you're old, but.
Yeah, maybe that's not exactly how the conversation goes.
Great. But I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. But yeah, man, like AD being the type of player that he is that is enormously beneficial to that, like to getting LeBron to play up to. And now that said, LeBron picks his spots, right? There'll be some possessions. If you just watch him, he's like, he's not going to go guard somebody. Like
yeah.
They're going to get an open corner three. We're going to hope that they miss it, but that is also more of a regular season thing. And it's, I suspect we'll see more of that as the games wind down or these seeding games wind down. Mm-hmm. Like he is going to pick his spots, but when he's locked in, man, and he's been locked in way more this year than he was last year.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man, he really completes, especially with Kuzma stepping up the way that it is. Our front court defense is remarkable. And that's one thing. We're shooting the worst from behind the arc of any team in the bubble. And we beat the Clippers, Utah, and we hung with Toronto while AD and LeBron were right?
Yeah.
And it's because our defense has been so good, right? And that starts with AD, but I think it's more powerful coming from LeBron, speaking to Kuzma's point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the expectation with AD is, dude, you're a 7-footer. You're in the prime of your life, the prime of your career. And the expectation here is you kind of should be doing these things, right? Like you're vying for a defensive player of the year. You should be doing all the rotations and handling all the rotations and making insane plays all over the court defensively. And then you look at LeBron, who is not all of those things and who has the insane mileage that he has. And then for Kuzma, especially, right? Because LeBron's doing this from essentially the same position. So Kuzma's watching that and you're saying, well, fuck, if he's doing it and he has to do all that other stuff on the other end of the court, well, you know, that means I really had. And then it really means more, you know, in those moments where LeBron says, Kuz, we need you on this one, right? Kuz says, it's easier for Kuz to buy all the way in response to LeBron saying, hey, we need you on this one. When he knows that when the Lakers need LeBron, LeBron is going to be bought all the way in.
Right. Absolutely.
And so all of these things, I think, come together. And I really think, you know, we've always kind of talked about chemistry in this completely kind of intangible and almost undefinable thing. But when you look at what the Lakers have done defensively this year, to me, like, that's where chemistry really shows up, right?
Oh, 100%.
It's sacrifice. It's making up for somebody else. It's sacricificing your body and all this.
So how do we describe defense, right? Like, they were on a string.
Exactly.
It's this five different parts of the same organism, right? When defense is good, everybody, it's like they're one being operating its limbs, right? And so, yeah, man, like, that's 100% where chemistry lives, is on the defensive end.
Absolutely. All right. That's going to do it for this episode. Fun off-night episode. This was a good one, I think. Yep. We are going to be back, or I will be back, after tomorrow's game to take you through however that goes. But for now, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.